Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for
in Dax's domain. We see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know.
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.
This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Wednesday, February 19, 2025. Thank you for downloading. My pilot buddy, Timmy B, is going to join us in just a few minutes to talk about, oh my God, another bonkers crash. Luckily, that involved nobody dying in Toronto for a CRJ 900 Delta, although it's not really Delta, it's operated by a regional jet, that flipped and caught on fire, but did not kill anybody. Unbelievable. How did it happen? There's now videos coming out. I've seen them and they are jaw-dropping. And of course, every amateur armchair pilot in America is on Twitter going, I bet it's this, I bet it's that. Well, we're going to talk to a real pilot, my friend Timmy B, in just a bit, and he'll give us his take on what he knows so far, plus some of the other aviation drama and tragedies as of late. I got to confess, I have a fascination with air disasters. They are horrible, obviously, for those who lose, you know, for families that lose their lives and their loved ones, but I can't get them out of my head. There's something about him that makes him compelling to me. But before we get to him, let's talk Rick Pitino for a second. His Johnnies are atop the Big East standings as we round the corner into March. 13-2 in league, 2 clear of Creighton, and 22-4 overall. They're 16-0 at home. He is, at 70 years old, the talk of college basketball. He is also a guy who's being featured by Vice Sports in a series about him and St. John's this year, where they've been given pretty much all access pass to what's going on with the program. Now, I don't know where this actual Vice documentary is. It is on TV, channel streaming. Is it an app? Somebody will have to fill me in on that. But I've got a clip for you today from Pitino talking about what makes for a good basketball player and what's key in life in terms of overcoming adversity. Take a listen.
Dig in and be a basketball player. Dig in. Every time you miss a shot, your game deflates. We don't care about your missed shots. Play defense. You guys keep blowing opportunity upon opportunity upon opportunity. You're like children with bad things happening. Instead of digging in and be tougher, you wilt. Where is your toughness. Where have you guys been raised that you're so weak mentally that you just give up when something doesn't go right for you? Don't you know what adversity is all about? That's the game of life, not the game of basketball. You don't get down when things go wrong. You dig in and get tougher. Your whole life's going to be adversity. Learn how to deal with it.
Patino, Red Storm Rising, Tuesdays at 10 on Vice.
All right, on Vice, Tuesdays at 10. I'm going to have to tune into that. Certainly that's good basketball advice, good life advice that, you know, you got to just keep moving forward. Don't dwell on your mistakes. Everyone's going to make mistakes, but be mentally tough. Don't crumble because of a mistake. He has taken that to heart in his career because of the shit that has gone down in his career, notably at Louisville, where he had two major scandals. The scandal that chased him was when he let his assistant coaches pay for prostitutes for his players as a recruiting enticement before we, of course, had the wonderful world of NIL and the transfer portal, and we didn't have to buy prostitutes for recruits. Who's we? What do you mean we? I meant the, you know, collective we. Coaches didn't have to do that. Of course, he claimed he had no knowledge of it. He went full Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing. Nobody believed him, of course, and so that was it for him at Louisville. He was then cast out into the wilderness, coaching-wise. He immediately, after he was fired, had no problem going on ESPN. I remember at the time thinking, man, the shamelessness, the balls on Patino to be like, oh, well, got fired. But you know what? I'm on ESPN. I'll talk some tournament. And he did that for about a year. He thought he might be able to get back into the college coaching game. Realized, yeah, not now. It's the landing zone's too hot. Nobody's going to take a chance on me. So he went to Greece to coach for three seasons for Panathinaikos, I think it is, from 2018 to 2020. He then was able to convince Iona to give him a shot. And the Gaels, of course, thrived in his three seasons at Iona because the guy knows how to coach. There's no disputing that. It was then, in 2023, that St. John's, long down on its former glorious past, said, fuck it, let's give him a chance. By the way, he's 72. And so now he's back, he's riding high, and he's the story of college basketball, but his whole career has been, okay, well, fucked up, airball, brick, in life, keep moving. Don't let the past get you down. It reminded me of the first scandal at Louisville, which was really bad, in which he impregnated a groupie for the program in the back booth of an Italian restaurant and then allegedly paid for her to get an abortion. That's what I kind of remember from the story, but I had to go back and look up some of the details of it to get the fuller scope of things. And I'm glad that I did, because now when I reference this story, I'm going to make sure to add a couple key elements. Spoiler alert, the woman who he had sex with ended up trying to extort him. She went to jail for 6 years for extortion. She was a bad actor, to say the least. But Patino did not deny the original sex. Patino, by the way, married, father of five. And when going to Google, is Rick Pitino divorced? Answer, AI overview, no. Rick Pitino is not divorced from his wife, Joanne Minardi. They married in 1976. They've got five children together. Hey, it goes to show you, at the end of the day, women, for men who fuck up and stray, have one central question to ask themselves. Would I rather be on the outside of the tent pissing in, or on the inside of the tent pissing out? And that's a loyal woman. They probably went through a lot of counseling too. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. You know, just it was a weak moment. I was a little bit drunk. Ah, fuck. God damn it. Anyway, here's how it went down. In court, 2010, Associated Press, Patino testifies about sex with defendant. Patino portrays Cypher as the aggressor and came on to him after several witnesses said she was flirty and persistent when she approached him at the restaurant. Well, that's what they do. You're supposed to say no. Repeatedly, forcibly. Surround yourself with people who will help prevent you from getting in this situation. Patino obliged her request to say happy birthday to her son on her cell phone. Of course, that's always, could you say hi to my son? When she returned later, Patino said he bought her a drink. They lingered to talk after the restaurant had closed and the owner had gone home. As he got up from the table, the married father of five said Ms. Cypher whispered something. He then said, quote, some unfortunate things happened. In a courtroom packed with spectators from Basketball Mad, state of Kentucky, she opened up my pants. Did you have sex that night? U.S. Assistant U.S. Attorney Marissa Ford asked. Patino, quote, yes, very briefly. It doesn't matter. Brief or like that, it's still, okay. Patino said after he and Cypher left the restaurant together, she asked for basketball tickets. Patino agreed and made the arrangements. Oh, really? You just want tickets? Fucking easy. Boom, done. A few weeks later, Cypher, then known as Karen Wise, called and said she was pregnant. Patino said, I didn't believe at the time it was my child. She said she didn't know what she was going to do. Cypher said she had no health insurance, so he offered her $3,000. Patino thought the money was for counseling and medical needs, but Cypher later said she had an abortion. Womp, womp. Patino, proud Catholic. Less than a year later, Patino's assistant, Tim Cypher, married Karen Wise. That part I forgot. So a year after this tryst, Patino's assistant married this nightmare. By the way, nobody knows about any of this at this point. Threats then began to come to reveal the fling 6 years after it took place. On February 26th of 2009, Patino listened to a cell phone message of a man's voice describing details of the encounter at the restaurant and calling it a violent assault. He mentioned the word rape, said Patino in court. I got very sick to my stomach. He said he felt threatened and frightened. Yeah. Patino also testified that he received a handwritten note from Cypher in March of 2009 that asked for cars, housing, and money. Of course. She's got him now. She's got him by the balls. Jurors also heard an hour-long recording Cypher made secretly of a meeting with Coach Patino. He is heard repeatedly asking Cypher who made the calls and how would someone have known the details of their 03 encounter. While Cypher never accuses Patino of rape, she complains that her current husband does little to make her life better. Patino then received a third threatening call 2 days later, telling him that the sexual relationship would be made public unless he, quote, did the right thing. He's already given her $3,000. She went and got an abortion. He said, oh, I thought that was for counseling and medical insurance. Sure. Patino said in March 2009, he got a letter from an attorney, Dana Coulter, of Louisville, who was representing Cypher. In the letter, Coulter accused Patino of rape and of forcing Cypher to have an abortion. He demanded a settlement to prevent a lawsuit. Coulter sought $10 million. Patino said that was then reduced to $5 million. That was when Patino contacted the FBI and then released a statement that someone was trying to extort money from him. Patino has coached at Louisville since 2001 after leaving the Celtics. Tim Cypher served as his special assistant in the NBA. Cypher continued to work for Patino as equipment manager and has recently been named director of the building that houses offices and training facilities for the Louisville team. The last line of this story from 2010 is, Karen and Tim Cypher, who have a five-year-old daughter, are in the midst of a divorce. Wow. Now, you can look up Karen Guggen Cypher, I believe is her full name. Karen Gunagin Cypher, S-Y-P-H-E-R. And she looks like the just hot enough, aging, middle-aged woman who has clearly lived fast and hard and has been willing to jump in the sack or the restaurant booth with just about anybody. Hot enough that you'd do her in the back seat of a, or in the back booth of an Italian restaurant when it's closed, but certainly not hot enough to actually leave your wife for. And Patino's assistant's like, I'm going to marry that woman. And he did. And he, Patino kept him on staff. Like, yeah, how's your wife? No, she's good. She said she really thinks about that night you fucked her in the back booth. Wow. Well, anyway, it goes to court and they convict the shit out of Karen Koenigan Cipher for extortion. Multiple counts, two counts of lying to the FBI, one count of retaliating against a witness, went to jail for 6 years, was facing a possible 26 years, but only served six. Now, some would say, well, shit, after that, I would probably just leave coaching. I would keep my money. I'd quietly go off and I'd, you know, teach basketball at some small camps. I would be so racked with the guilt and the shame. Although Patino just said, no, fuck it. Just like in his speech, you know, forget your last missed shot. Keep pressing ahead. And yes, he was extorted. And yes, she deserved to go to prison. But he's the one who got his dick out in the back of an Italian restaurant. And he's the one who had everything to lose. But he couldn't resist. A little bit too much vino flowing at the time. Nobody around him to go, coach. No, this is not the way it's going to happen. If you absolutely have to have something new, strange, that is outside the bounds of your marriage, let me, your trusted confidant, arrange for that with a professional. Because as Charlie Sheen, when he was on his rant saying, I pay them to leave. He could have set that up, but he didn't. So what's the net? In the broader sense, you got to shake off your missed shots in life. But in the more specific moral instances of life, when you're a very successful college football coach, college basketball coach, one of the greatest of all time in the college game, worth millions and millions of dollars, keep an eye out for those who are coming for you with their claws or their fingernails sharpened, because they are out there, not just for the players, but certainly for the coaches as well. And it starts with a, can you call my son for his birthday? One drink, two drink, restaurants closed, back booth. You know what? Who's going to know? Coming up, unbelievable footage coming out from both inside the Flip Jet in Toronto and the landing. We'll talk to my buddy, Timmy B, the pilot, next. You're listening to the Zabecast. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process, or you've been struggling to get your job post seen on other sites, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. Want to know how fast Indeed really is? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. The World Series, Super Bowl, the Olympics. The world's top athletes get to play in these top-level sporting events thanks to one thing: teamwork. And teamwork can also protect your financial legacy and your family's future. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents are the perfect teammates when shopping for a customized, affordable life insurance plan. They can find you the right policy to keep your financial legacy safely in your family's end zone. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/Zabe. That's SelectQuote.com/Zabe. Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/Zabe.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Well, it has been far too exciting, and by exciting I mean tragic, of a time when it comes to aircraft and aviation and all kinds of stuff, because 16 years is the number I saw between the last fatal commercial United States fatality of any kind in a commercial aircraft, going back to the Colgan Air Buffalo disaster with a regional jet in 2009. We have been living on borrowed time when it comes to just the law of averages. And my friend Timmy B, the pilot, joins us now to talk about all this stuff. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Steve-o, how's it going?
I'm going good, man. Way too many craft coming out of the sky with horrifying consequences, and in the case of the latest, miraculous outcomes with this Delta-flagged charter or this regional jet in Toronto, which you're going to get to in a second, by the way. Good to talk to you again, Tim. Tim has flown a whole lot of stuff in his career, civilian, military, flown for Customs Border Patrol, circling high-value targets for hours and hours. We talked about that on a previous podcast, support missions in Afghanistan. He was kind enough to gift me an American flag, flown over that country, and now flies domestically a corporate jet for a significant company, we'll say, in the U.S., a sweet Falcon 900. That's a pretty good bird you're flying, right, Tim?
You could do a lot worse.
Yeah, you could do a lot worse. Is there any other private jet that you would go, ooh, and look with a bit of envy?
Yeah, a Global Express or a Gulfstream like 650.
Okay, Gulfstream 650 or a Globe. Do they call the Global Express the Globex?
Maybe I think so. Yeah, okay. There's a Global 7000. They got a whole bunch of variants. They all look the same. As a matter of fact, they look like that CRJ.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's get to the latest one here. Delta-badged CRJ-900 operated by a regional jet company. I don't know their name exactly. It doesn't really matter. It's complicated, they say, the way these things get badged with. Okay, we're a Delta flight, quote-unquote Delta, from Minneapolis to Toronto. Belly flops on a snowy runway and catches a wing and flips, catching fire briefly. 80 souls on board, and they all survived. 76 passengers, 4 crew members, several seriously hurt but expected to live. Footage, Tim, from a nearby pilot on a taxiway has come out that is exceptionally clear and shows a whole lot. What do you see when what's the first thing you see as a pilot when you see that footage?
Well, you know, when you're getting ready to touch down, the last thing you do is flare, is what it's called. And what you're doing is just decreasing the sink rate so you can touch down more gently. And, you know, I mean, this is very, you know, off of a video. I'm not a CRJ pilot, so I don't know the techniques that they use. But it didn't appear that they flared an awful lot, if any. And so maybe it was a hard landing.
So a flare would be kind of ass down, nose up, just a little bit at the very end, right?
Yeah, just so you could touch down gently.
Do you do that?
We've all experienced it, right?
Do you do that with the flaps or with a little bit of thrust or both?
Neither, right? Your flaps are already set. So when you're on final approach, you get the flaps set. You're pitching towards the end of the runway. You're following your instruments all the way down. And when you get to about, you know, 200 feet, you should, on the worst weather days, 200 feet in most planes, hopefully break out of the clouds and then, you know, commit to landing. And then at about 50 feet, you start arresting that rate of descent. Because at that point, if you're doing, let's say, 130 knots, which is like 150 miles an hour or so, you know, you're going pretty quick. So you want to, and your descent rate is about 900 feet a minute, let's say, maybe 8. Right, that's a little aggressive for touching down. So you want to get that number lower. So what you do is just pull the nose up just a hair, and then hopefully ease the airplane onto the ground.
So it's a stick maneuver then. You're not messing with the flaps. You're not gunning the engine. You're just pulling it back just a tiny bit.
Just a hair, and then you pull the power off. If all goes well, you touch down nicely. It's the only art thing in flying. Everything else is pretty, canned.
Right.
But the art of actually landing, stick and rudder skills, all that comes into play. And that plane doesn't have an auto land in it, like a 777 would or something of that size. So it's all the pilot, just like it is on my plane. So
when I saw the footage from yesterday, which was just after the plane had crashed, upside down but intact, my first thought was, is this an AI video? Because in my life, Tim, I've never seen a plane intact that had crash landed, flipped on its lid, but was mostly intact.
I agree. That was the first for me.
Yeah, right. So I guess, you know, some are saying now, well, maybe it was good that the runway was a little bit slick, a little bit snowy, so that it would skid a bit more, so that the fuselage outran the wings, which caught on fire, because that's where the fuel is. That's one theory right there. Another theory is that the right wing touched and then dug in. The left wing was still off the ground and it still had some lift. And because of that, it just lifted and flipped the fuselage over.
Could have. Yeah. Both were very plausible. So it could have also been like the landing gear, right? If they hit hard, there was a crosswind, right? So they're coming in. Well, you don't see it in the video. Their nose is canted off to one side. If they didn't bring the nose around quite enough and you hit the gear with a big side load, the gear could collapse. And this, the same thing happens, right? The gear collapses, the wing hits the ground, and next thing you know, you're sliding down the runway on your back. So
unbelievable. So I guess we're gonna obviously know a whole lot more about this since the pilot survived. They can give firsthand testimony as to what happened. We're gonna have all the black boxes and whatever. And I guess we're gonna find out just how much training and whatnot. From what I understand, Tim, is that the pilots at the lower end of the food chain that start out on the regional jets or even the turboprops, my God, they do not get paid much money.
No, not at all. When I used to do that, I flew for American Eagle in New York for a while. And I remember asking the hotel van driver how much he made a year at that. You know, this is back in 1990. And he said he's making 40 a year. And I'm like, dude, I'm making 16. So I shouldn't be tipping you. You should be tipping me.
Unbelievable. Yeah, because I remember reading about the Colgan air crash, and it was like, you know, these poor young pilots, and they were in their 20s. They were basically making nothing. They were hardly sleeping. They were flying too many routes, and they were tasked with touching down in a massive snowstorm in Buffalo, New York, in the dead of winter. And I guess nobody thought, like, hey, these are not very experienced pilots. And, hey, this is a twin prop where there isn't the automated landing stuff you normally have. The recipe for disaster was there.
Yeah, I mean, their training is good. Their training in the airlines. Once you get – if you're in a regional airline like, you know, the Endeavor flight that just crashed or Colgan, their training is excellent.
Okay, so they've been trained well, but they don't have as much experience, though, hours in the cockpit. And that makes a difference, right?
That's true. Okay. Yeah, for sure. You know, you got to get it someplace. You know, nobody starts off in a 747. So,
all right. So there was that. Then there was the unbelievable tragedy of the Black Hawk and the CRJ 700 at DCA. Mid-air collision. It's the first fatal commercial mid-air collision, I think, since the late 70s over San Diego, when there was a 727, Tim, I believe, that got caught mid-air. It's so rare, thankfully. But holy crap, it happened.
Yeah, boy, did it. You know, my heart goes out to the families. God rest their souls. It's a tragic, tragic event, you know, for sure.
So we had this, you know, so the American Airlines CRJ 700 from Wichita was 67 on board, three in the Black Hawk. The Black Hawk was on a training mission piloted by 28-year-old Rebecca Lobach. She was a distinguished military graduate from North Carolina, had 500-plus hours of flight time. We could talk more about that in a second.
Sure.
Extremely crowded airspace. This corridor number four for the helicopters along the Potomac is very well known as a very dicey airspace. Lots of confusing lights. They were apparently wearing night vision goggles. And it was critical to fly at 200 feet or lower, and they were at least 350, although they're still trying to figure out exactly what the altimeter on the Black Hawk said. What is your gut feeling as to what might have happened there?
Okay, so I've flown that route as an airline pilot a ton, and as a pilot for the government a ton as well. Probably hundreds of times up and down Route 4.
And
it's a known spot. You know, if you're flying that route, if you're listening, I'm always listening. Hey, if somebody's circling on 3-3, I'm focused. I'm trying to find them, because even though, you know, they can legally go above you, I don't want that to happen. I'm not comfortable with that. So I'm generally slowing down and looking for them if I hear that somebody's circling to 3-3. And I'm not going to cross that path, me personally, until I know where that plane is. And even then, I'm probably going to get even lower. I'll get down to maybe 100 feet over the water.
So you say find them. You mean visually?
Visually.
Okay. Which, I mean, it can be challenging given all the lights that are there and all the planes in the sky. Because they were saying that there was a ATC transmission that leaked out that said, okay, you know, you see that regional jet? And they said, yes. And then they gave an instruction to go behind it. But now the latest is that the instruction to go behind it may have been cut off because the Black Hawk's mic may have been triggered, which then blacks out incoming messages.
Well, you're on it. That's exactly what happened. So they stepped on each other, and then they each don't hear the other one talking.
There's got to be a better way, right?
You would think, right?
You know, to have some crosstalk or something like that, or to say, isn't that why they say in the military, over, so that way you don't step on each other, over.
Back in the old days, yeah, for sure. You know, radios were a lot worse then. You know, they were not nearly as clear, so they had to make it, you know, obvious that they were done talking.
Right.
You know, but in this case, right, so, you know, just to go through what I suspect happened, and, you know, the only investigators really know. So I'll put myself in the shoes of the Black Hawk crew. You know, I'm the guy giving the check ride because I used to be an instructor pilot in Black Hawk, so I'm very familiar with doing that. You've got your check ride taker sitting next to you in the right seat. And so you're keeping an eye on that person for sure, right? Because people are nervous when they're taking a check ride. They're uncomfortable because you're going to ask them a lot of questions and put them in tricky spots. And that's just part of training. It's what you do. But, you know, I'm paying very strict attention to them. So you're coming down the river. ATC says, hey, you got traffic circling to 3-3, you know, and the PIC, the captain or the instructor pilot says, Roger, we'll maintain visual separation, meaning he sees them. I'm taking responsibility for keeping myself separated from that traffic coming down or circling to land on 3-3. What could have happened is he might have been looking, or just to break real quick, right? If you put your hands up like you're pretending to look through binoculars with your hands, and you make those like toilet paper tube shapes, and you're looking through them over your eyes.
I'm doing it right now.
What do you see 45 degrees to your left where your hand is blocking the view? Nothing.
Yeah,
exactly. You're looking at your hand, or in the case of night vision goggles, you're not looking over there. There's a 40 degree field of view. So if you're looking straight ahead at the Wilson Bridge, thinking that is the aircraft that's going to circle, you're waiting for him to turn, theoretically, possibly. And yeah, we've got them. You know, they say, hey, you got traffic that's going to circle the 33. You're like, yeah, I know. I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
When you think you're looking at it, and in fact, you're looking at somebody else, you don't see the guy coming from that 45 degrees to your left front because the goggles are blocking your view.
I guess what blows me away is that if you know you have to be at 200 feet, not 300, not 350, mm-hmm. not 400, wouldn't that be the first most crucial thing that would be theoretically the easiest to do, not just if you have a working altimeter, but also a just a sense of above the ground? Like, I'm pretty darn low here because I don't want to be in any incoming air traffic.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. You know, when I've flown it, you know, you're going right down the river. You got Bowling Air Force Base right out your side.
Right.
If you're, you know, right out your left side there. I'm going to get low enough where I'm looking at the trees sideways through the window. That's the way I typically do that, especially if somebody's landing on 3-3.
Looking at the trees. So you're hugging the Potomac.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Why not? It's fun. Just don't crash into the river, for God's sake.
I know what altitude it's at, and I don't know where the traffic circle in the 3-3 might be.
Right. The Potomac is going to stay at the same altitude, zero feet above sea level, basically. The other question is 500 hours a lot of hours in the seat, or is it in the middle? Is it light? What is it?
It's about the time you make pilot in command in the Army on active duty, which they were.
Right.
You know, okay. That's a couple of years. You're flying maybe 250 hours a year. She's a staff officer, so that makes it harder, right? In the Army, it's a little bit different than the other services. The warrant officers do the bulk of the flying. The instructor pilot was a warrant officer. And the commission officers, you know, not only do flying, certainly when they're in a flying unit, but they also spend a lot of time in staff jobs.
Right.
For instance, she was probably, you know, her duties going to the White House and escorting dignitaries or whatever other stuff she had to do. That was part of her commissioned officer stuff that keeps her out of the cockpit and doing routine chores. So she's probably not, just by virtue of where she works, getting as much flight time as a lot of her peers.
Yeah, there was a photo of her, I guess, behind the podium with the official presidential seal, pretending to take questions. It was a heartbreaking photo because she looked so joyful and full of life, and that was part of what she did as part of that. The other thing that just makes me go, okay, so there's nowhere else they can train but on crowded corridor 4 going into DCA. Why don't you go train out somewhere else? Or is that part of the training to fly difficult corridors?
It is, and in fact, that's probably the easiest corridor in D.C., I think, to fly, other than the altitude.
Okay.
I mean, it's a breeze. You can't get lost, right? You're following the river.
That's true. Yeah, I guess you're right, as long as you're at the right altitude. Okay. All right, the third one I want to talk to you about, not in this country, South Korea. Jeju Air landing at Muan Airport.
Yeah.
Crashes after the landing gear didn't come down. There was a bird strike and a fly around, and it barrels into what is called a localizer that was reinforced with concrete and steel. These localizers are like the facility to hold the antenna, and I forget what else, the lights, you know, that go at the end of the runway. And there's a lot of criticism, like, why did you fortify that with steel and concrete? Because that's what caused the plane to basically disintegrate. There's more layers of mystery to it because 4 minutes, Tim, of the cockpit recorder are missing. Four minutes. And they're trying to find out what happened there. They're thinking possible power failure, hydraulic failure. But other pilots are saying, well, wait a minute. Even if it's a hydraulic failure, I've never seen that, never seen a bird strike prevent the landing gear from coming down. Because you can crank those down, apparently. Also, they said, why did the pilot land halfway down the runway?
Yeah. Do you see how fast he was going? What it appeared he was going?
Screaming fast. Which,
yeah.
Even if you've got no hydraulics, you can still feather that airplane down a bit, right? Slower and easier?
Yeah. None of that made sense. It seemed like something caused them to react in an extremely aggressive way like that and try to get the thing on the ground, I guess thinking that was their best option. But man, they were moving out down that runway, and it sounded like they had power. Is that the way you heard it? Because that's the way I heard it.
Yeah. Also, to make this one even more suspicious, the CEO of the Korea Airports Corporation was found dead of suicide just a couple weeks after the crash. Very fishy. That airport had apparently been under siege for mismanagement, and there was investigators and the government was involved. It's just crazy. And 179 killed. I guess it's the worst air disaster in South Korean history involving a 737-800, which is a very well proven airplane that, you know, generally speaking is quite reliable. This one's just crazy. So let me ask about this localizer thing. Some were saying in these articles I read that, look, you don't need to fortify it with concrete and steel. Like, you can just have the antennas there, and if, God forbid, a plane goes through the runway into the open grassy area, it'll wipe those out, but we'll rebuild those. It's better than having people die. Why was that reinforced that way?
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible that, you know, there was a dip in the ground after the runway, and so to elevate the antennas so the airplane was receiving its signal. That's the only thing I could think of. I mean, gee whiz. Or a lot of airplanes have a system of like this collapsible concrete looking stuff at the end of the runway that absorbs energy and will stop an airplane.
Sort of like a safer barrier in NASCAR.
Yeah, exactly. So you hit that stuff, you'll come to a stop before you get to antennas or fences or roads or buildings, you know, like a Teterboro. Off the end of the runway means you're crossing what is Route 46 and going into the side of a building.
Yeah.
So, you know, and what the localizer antenna does is it's basically part of your navigation system on the ground, so you can precisely laterally fly to the runway.
Right.
And it just gives you a signal in the cockpit and just keep the needle centered, for lack of a better phrase, and drive it right on down.
Yeah. Then we had that medical jet in Philly that pretty much nosedived, I mean, went screaming straight into the ground, left a huge crater. A small child was killed, unfortunately. 7 deaths on board, 1 on the ground. Then 2 private jets collided at Scottsdale's little airport right after the waste management. 1 dead, 4 injured in that one. There was some video of that. And then an EA-18G Growler went right into the water off the coast of San Diego. Luckily, the pilots punched out before it went in, but there's video of that just going skwoosh.
Yeah, other than that, it's been kind of a slow month.
God darn it. I want enough. Let's start a new 16-year streak of nothing dramatic happening, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Anything anything else in your world, anything interesting happen in the skies with you? Have you seen any drones, Pilot Tim?
You know, funny, I was looking at that. I was calling some of my old friends places that I used to work, which will go nameless, trying to ask. I know it's being dealt with at, you know, in the classified channels at the highest levels.
Right.
So something's going on. If you ask me, it's probably friendlies. They're probably testing something or looking for something, and they don't want to admit it. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, that would be my operative theory. They're probably certainly ours, and by ours, I mean both government and contracted drones from companies, right?
Sure.
That work with the government saying, well, we got a drone that's got this night vision, it's got this stealth, it's got this speed. Do you mind if we test it out over here?
Yeah. Heck, going back, remember that balloon that, or yeah, it was a balloon that
the
left.
Chinese balloons that flew
over
the
country.
Oh, okay.
Aberdeen Proving Ground, and a balloon got loose on a tether and started drifting off to the west for whatever reason, because the winds were, you know, coming out of the east for once.
When was this?
This was back maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Okay, all right.
So they called us up and asked us if we could shoot it down, of all things. We're like, no, we're not going to take responsibility for that.
Unbelievable.
You know, why would I do that? It's going to land, you know, where's it going to land? On somebody? On, you know, no.
All right. Captain Tim, good to talk to you. Keep flying safe. Thank you for your insight, as always. And we'll talk again down the road, hopefully when nothing else interesting happens for a long time.
That sounds like a plan, brother.
We'll end on this today. At what percent would you start getting worried? NASA keeps nudging up the odds of the city-killing asteroid that has a potential to hit Earth sometime in 2032. Asteroid YR4 2024, which is for the year they found it out there with their telescopes, has had a rise in odds of hitting planet Earth since they first spotted it. It began at a mere like 1-point-something% chance. It has now gone up to 1.8, to 2.4. It is now the latest update, 2.6% chance, or 1 in 38% chance of hitting, 1 in 38 chance of hitting home. And if it hits a city, it's a city killer, they say. So yeah, the question is, at what percent do you start to go, oh boy, even though 2032 is a ways away, it'll be here quick. And, you know, if it got up to 10% is when I'd say, okay, fuck. Now I'm kind of, now this is on my mental radar. 10% is my number. What's your number? Let me know. Leave a comment below, as the kids like to say on YouTube. We're not on YouTube. Not really. We're trying to get there, but just give us time on that. Do rate and review for those listening to the Zabecast. Thank you so much for Timmy B jumping on today to talk airplanes, aviation crashes, technology, pilots, error, all that other fascinating stuff, even though it is a bit morbid at times. Thank you for downloading as well. Have yourself a crackerjack Wednesday, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.